Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
That's what they need to do with the hotel rooms. They need to have that smart glass where you flip a switch and the glass goes opaque. And then if you're with your sexy partner and you want to have sexy shower viewing times, you can unflip it.
The opposite. Your fail state has to be not showing my dong to everyone in the room.
No, that could be, if power is not supplied, it could be clear. And when it's turned, you know, turned on, it goes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Like, now I'm in. Now I'm in.
Yeah. Okay. It's a superposition. Jim's quantum naked ass.
You might see it. You might not. Welcome to the Dark Matter podcast, the officially unofficial podcast for Dark Matter on Apple TV Plus. Apple TV Plus, that's what it's called. I'm Jim.
I'm Aaron.
And we have watched the first episode now of Dark Matter. I know there are two episodes out, but we want to take this one at a time just in case you're taking it one at a time. It's called Are You Happy in Your Life? Aaron, are you happy in your life?
That's a complicated question.
It sure is.
That would involve looking inside boxes and seeing how many cats are dead, and I don't want to do any of that right now. Let me turn around on you, since you are the book reader and you're the one with actual expectations for this show. Are you happy with the first hour of Dark Matter?
I am. I'm happy with it, mostly because it adheres very closely to the books, book. So the first half of this is almost word for word from the book. And you don't get quite as much, insight into the characters' inner workings here. But I think that's fine, because I think Dark Matter, the characters, were probably the weakest part of that book. But here, you know, they're doing a pretty good job with the characterizations. I feel like this is a couple who really loves each other, cares about each other. They care about their kid. They've got a good life here. They don't want to disrupt it. And boy, does it get disrupted early on. I was excited to see it. I'm happy. It feels like it's quality television. I'm a little concerned that I am blinded to the relative quality of this thing just because I have these ideas of what it should be and shouldn't be in my head. And I'm really trying to step outside of all that when I do my evaluation of it. And I think, based on that this is just really good TV. I don't see any just obvious flaws in storytelling. I don't see any, you know, shortcuts that they've taken to maybe hit a certain budget or a certain time in the episode. It all felt right to me. So I am pleased. How about you?
Yeah, not knowing anything other than this is written by Blake Crouch, who I enjoyed his Recursion, and you say that this is a great book. I like Joel Edgerton. I feel like he's kind of whiffed on some of the chances he's gotten, but I like him and I think he's good here. I love Jennifer Connelly.
Of course. Yeah.
Ever since I realized I had eyeballs and she appeared in a movie. Uh-huh. She's really good here, especially when you have to play what I'm assuming are very small differences in characterizations to kind of know what's going on. Mm-hmm. And I love Jimmy Simpson, who didn't do much, but certainly has, seems like he's going to be a pivotal figure. So I would say that I am intrigued by this first episode, but I don't know if I'm hooked yet. And I'm guessing that's why the two episodes are in a pair. And I'm expecting by the end of next episode, which I haven't seen, for that hook to be set. Because like you said, this is manifestly a quality piece of television, and this is about 45 minutes long, and I felt like I saw the first act of a really good movie where I'm like, okay, let's see what this thing has to say. But it's also very bewildering.
Well, that was gonna be my question. I'm really interested to see how much you think you know about the story and how confused or sort of unmoored you feel in this first episode, because I can't put myself in that place knowing how this story goes.
And unfortunately, I can't either, because as you pointed out in the preview podcast, a trailer, and I guess I don't, because I feel like at the end of this, I was kind of really gripped up because I could see what they were doing from the midway point of the episode.
Oh, boy.
And I'm like, oh, I get it. But this could be bad if this is going to be a big reveal that Apple's production team or marketing team is spoiled. But by the end of the episode, I think maybe it's not the third step of a Martin reveal, but it's certainly it's a heavy footed step of a second step. And if you're new to our podcast coverage, I often refer back to this George Martin philosophy of the three-step reveal, where he puts something that only a very clever or astute person would notice by happenstance. And then the second is he weaves that thread with another one to get other clued in people. And then to make sure that no one's left behind, he just, you know, the reveal is here's the twist.
Tells you what's happening.
And I found that's a lot of good puzzle box television kind of uses those constructions. But it's also tough to pull off in the age of the internet, because
especially when they're source material, you know.
Yeah,
I mean,
if it's a one out of a million, now it's a source material, but if you got a one out of a million clever person notice this thing, well, we have 8 billion people on this planet all talking on the internet about things, so
pretty soon we're gonna have AI crunching away on it, right? Like
that gives you 8,000 chances to get it right even without the source material. So I guess that wasn't as big of a deal, since Blake Crouch is the showrunner and he's the master of adapting this, that you know, he knows the juice that makes his book go. And I thought it was very clear that I don't know if this is a time traveling Jason. I don't know if this is a space time displaced or interdimensional Jason. But, you know, we just saw Constellation. I only watched the first few hours before I'm like, well, this is kind of slow paced and boring. But I definitely got a lot of that Constellation, like a person that's unstuck or stuck in the wrong time, the wrong place. And then I also got, is it weird to say that I got heavy Breaking Bad vibes off of this?
No, not at all. I got
this is
ton
essentially
of Walter White.
The plot of Breaking Bad minus the cancer. And he's a high school physics teacher instead of a high school chemistry teacher. Maybe
minus
college?
The cancer plus a kidnapping, you know? It's like, palette swapped on this, so
yeah, like Scarface kidnaps Mr. Chips and steals his wedding ring and beats him and he drugs him and leaves him for, I don't know, dead or displaced or what. So but like I said, I'm already compared it to Constellation. I think this thing has much more of a pulse than Constellation does. Like this thing was moving and grooving and throwing you curveballs from minute one, essentially.
Yeah. No, it did surprise me when I saw that trailer how much I felt that they were giving away in the story. But then I watched this first episode, and I assume in the second episode we're going to get way into it. But this first episode gives away so much that had to be intentional. They're saying this is the premise of the show, and we're going to go places with it. So hang on. I just remember in the book waiting a lot longer to get the reveal that they give you in this first episode. And feeling like, oh, I'm really curious what the hell is going on here. But they just kind of reveal a lot in this first episode.
Yeah, and I'm guessing I can already see in the book how easy it would be to hide, you know, because you've got going through the same house and he's, you know, got all of the things memorized and you're probably not sure which Jason you're dealing with, because Blake Crouch is just, you know, kind of weaving in between, and you kind of have to slowly pick up on the inconsistencies. But in the show, you fucking can't do that, you know?
Right. You got to show the man's face.
You got to show the man's face.
It's different because you just don't know that there are multiple Jasons for a long time. You kind of follow him, at what he does in the second half of this episode, the let's call him Jason Prime. I don't know. He does in the second half of this episode, you just kind of follow that track, as opposed to having these intercut things where, you know, now you're seeing another Jason. That's confusing.
Jason Prime?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay. Because I thought you implied the other. Also, when you said multiple Jasons, are there more than two of them?
Well, that's mildly interesting. That's mildly interesting, Aaron.
You could have said two Jasons as well. That's
two
the first
qualifies
step of
as multiple.
Jim Jones reveal, I think. I caught it. I was one in a million that caught that one, Jim.
Mm.
Should we talk about the format? Like, because we have taken over the Bald Move Pulp feed. We expect this to be a one and done series. I'm not sure if that's 100% confirmed, because you can always, we talked about this in Shogun.
I'm pretty sure.
Yeah. But maybe Blake Crouch can do some of his other books that are also equally amazing. Just have like a mind-blowing sci-fi anthology. But yeah, we like, why start up a new feed when we got so much stuff, other stuff going on? Let's just take over to Prestige, or I'm sorry, to Pulp feed. So no worries, we'll still be releasing Pulp stuff here too, such as the Fall Guy first run movie we'll be talking about this week. Also, feedback has, ever since we've been founded, a huge part of our podcast. We kind of hemmed and hawed about covering this because we have this kind of gap in May that is right before this true content crush in June happens, where we have House of the Dragon. That's a 3-podcast-a-week show for us. We got The Boys, which is a big show. We got The Bear dropping its entirety.
We'll still have this
in the middle of this, and this is going to lead in. So what we're doing, especially to address some of the people's concerns, and when we've had screeners before, is we're just going to record all these in advance and not do feedback. If you like to discuss the stuff with us and fellow Bald Movers, there's the Discord, discord.baldmove.com. There's the forums, baldmove.discourse.group. If you want to check those out. But we're going to try something completely different, just as a neurotech experiment to see if this, because we are looking at it, it's like, this is kind of the only way we could do it. We'd have to record a lot of them way in advance. And then you have the problem of trying to keep track of, you know, which feedback goes with what episode and not do spoilers. So we're just going to do it between me and Jim here. And he's read the books and I haven't. So hopefully we'll have everything covered. Maybe a wrap up podcast at the end to kind of get everybody's thoughts on it.
Yeah, that'd be nice.
Yeah. So, you know what? Fuck it. Dark Matter at baldmove.com. Don't plan on anything being read, because if everything goes well by the time you've heard this, we've got the majority of the seasons recorded. But yeah, if we do a wrap up, we'll spin that mailbox up just to see what people are thinking. And then we will be releasing these date and time. You probably figured that out if you're listening to this right now. We'll be dropping these as the episodes drop on iTunes, or not iTunes, on Apple TV. So that's the other benefit. You don't have to wait 2 days for our opinions. We'll have them fully formed. Anything else I'm missing in terms of general announcements?
I don't think so. I think it's about time we got into the recap.
We'll be right back with more Bald Move after this brief pause.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
We try to make it super easy to support making podcasts at Bald Move. Just join the club.
But some people aren't the joining type, or maybe they're already in the club but want to add a little bit of gratuity for an especially great season of coverage, or for podcasts that really spoke to them or gave them that bit of support in a tough time.
For these, and for whatever other reason you might have, our tip jar is always open. Head over to support.baldmove.com and click the donate option to say, hey, keep doing what you're doing. We appreciate it.
Once again, check out support.baldmove.com for all the great ways to help me and Jim keep making the podcast you love. And now, back with more Bald Move. Yeah, let's do it. We open in what appears to be an industrial facility. It's abandoned. There's water leaking and pooling. There's no power. It's very dark. And we see a man in a hazmat suit exploring the area with a flashlight.
Yeah, intriguing opening, huh? No context. Don't really know what's going on here. It's like, there's, it's a very strange Breaking Bad cold open.
There's a, I didn't see nearly enough underwear
and pants. But
no, you
there
see
is
his underwear by the end. Yeah. That's better
true.
Than Walter.
That's true. There is a strange cube that looks to be about 12 by 12 by 12 in the middle of the screen. Mm-hmm. Is that the observation interview room we see later where, you know, it's got the one-way privacy windows, or am I not supposed to understand
mildly
what that
interesting.
Is?
I will say it resembles the sort of structural stuff we see in the intro, right? In like the theme song title
okay.
sequence.
Okay. I was going to mention that next, that the credits are what I would describe as like a brutalist architecture version of an M.C. Escher Rubik's
yep.
Cube. There's this kind of forming and reforming. But yeah, I wondered if it was that little facility that they were observing him in, or if this was his neurotech company in a different timeline. But yeah, all mildly interesting, huh?
All mildly interesting. I think I can say, without giving anything real away, no, that's not the same room that
okay.
he's interrogated in. Okay. But I can't tell you what that thing is.
All right. I will say that the person who is seen by Almatica's wild stab is one of the Jasons. It doesn't seem like he's very concerned with that cube. Like, it's not like, oh, here's what I found. It's more like it just sweeps over as he's looking around. It doesn't seem to hold any special fascination for me. And in fact, I wouldn't even have noticed it except for they immediately follow it with the intro sequence that makes a big deal yeah. out of this kind of transforming cube thing. So,
yeah, my wife was immediately noticing the, you know, sort of wood textured concrete construction of that thing. And I think it's a neat aesthetic. You know, it's very like modern art kind of feel to it. Modern, you know, high end decor stuff, right?
Yeah. Yeah. It looks like something you'd get at Crate and Barrel or.
Yeah. Or like people might even put their house in their like $4 million, you know, brand new house that they're building and then regret like 2 years in because it's cold and echoey and it sucks.
Doesn't look like people live here.
Not really.
You know where it looks like people live?
Where's
looks
that?
Like people live at Jason and Daniela's house.
Sure does.
We're introduced to Jason, physics teacher at a local school. Is it a college or a high school?
It's a college. It's
okay.
Lakemont
so he's dropping
University.
His son off at high school, and then he goes on to college. Okay, because
yeah.
I wasn't sure if this was just like a really upscale high school that has lecture theaters and all that stuff. But we find out he's married to Daniela, who's played by Jennifer Connelly, very, very beautiful. And they have a teenage son, Charlie. And as he cooks breakfast, it seems they have manifestly a stable, loving family.
And that's key. Like I said, I didn't think the characters in the book were very three-dimensional. And I will say it was kind of a necessity that you mm-hmm. think that they're three-dimensional mm-hmm. over the course of that book. So I was a little let down by that, but I think like not only is she beautiful, but she's bringing just a lot of warmth and light to this characterization of Daniela.
Yeah.
And I really found them just a lot of just good vibes to watch. You know, it felt mm-hmm. like this was a happy home just right off the bat.
Yeah. You know, he's, you know, we kind of established that you know, by the homework that he's helping with the son, that he's pretty smart, got a good grasp of math. We later see her in an art gallery telling us that she's sophisticated and intelligent. And
although I gotta say, yeah. their house, they must own this thing since like 1985, because I don't know that a college professor, he's talking about how easy it is to beat his salary. That's an expensive home.
But she's an art dealer. So like, and then it has her own gallery.
Or an artist? I guess she is a dealer, huh?
It seems like a dealer to me, where because she's talking about other people's techniques and stuff like that. And she's got a, you know, looks like a museum, but it's got a receptionist.
That doesn't
desk.
Really jive it's, with what I know of the story. But
oh, well,
okay.
I could get it wrong, but it screamed to me an art dealer. Like this is an art gallery that she does private exhibitions, but she's probably selling this stuff. But I could be wrong because fuck, I haven't read the book. Supposed
no,
to mildly interest
right.
me on that, okay? You know, right. When I get something wrong, you're supposed okay. to be like, oh, I do. That's interesting. Yeah. Oh, art dealer. Okay. Oh, all right. You dumbass. That's you're
look,
missing
I'm just
out on
getting
all the
used
fun.
To this. I'm just.
Okay.
I'll grow into it. I'll call you a dumbass soon enough. Don't worry.
I did notice that they had the sign, you know, it's the two hands making a heart, and one of them is a man hand and one of them is a woman hand. And then there's a little set of baby feet in the middle. So this is obviously this is where they came to start a family, and they're still here. He lets his son drive to school and almost gets killed for it.
Yeah, let that be a lesson to you fathers.
Yeah. Is the Dessen family just terrible at vehicular safety, because Jason almost gets his ass ran over later on? Is this
twice?
Is trying to tell me there's something?
Yeah, there's I think so.
There's some kind of hitch in time that's like a.
Yeah, mildly interesting, dumbass.
All right. Now you see. Now you're getting it. I did clock that they're being observed by a black SUV, which I believe shows up later in the episode.
Several times. It's kind of lurking a lot more than you think. Like I actually watched this episode three times because my wife wanted to watch it as well. And yeah, I noticed that SUV is everywhere.
It is. It's he's keeping this guy under watch. A guy who's Jimmy Simpson, his name is Ryan, calls while they're driving to work and says, hey, I won the Pavia. And I'm going to be in town to celebrate. And I'm like, what the hell is a Pavia? But by context, it seems like it's the Nobel Peace Prize by any other. It's just a fake Nobel Prize for this universe.
Totally. I tried to look up a Pavia because I didn't know, but I can't find any context for it.
It looks like there's a Pavia University that's offering us like gifts and grants and scholarships, but it's nothing like this where it's like you win $1 million. But it's very much like, you know, you even see it later on. It looks like a Nobel Prize.
And isn't that the actual amount that you win for a Nobel? Isn't it $1 million? Okay. So
it exactly is.
I think it's a stand in for that pretty obviously.
At the school, or I guess I could say it's his college now, Jason's giving a lecture to pretty much bored students about Schrodinger's cat. Oh boy. How many lectures on Schrodinger's cat have I gotten in pop culture?
Is this two months
with Constellation.
Is this better or worse than the growth transformation decay speech from Walter White? Because I think this
was
an
terrible
excellent
chemistry. Because that was, yeah. I mean, yes. I mean, it works the exact same way. You see that there's a man who has all this passion, all this insight into his craft, and it's basically pearls being cast before swine. You know,
it could be taken as boring because like everybody knows what Schrodinger's cat is, right? Like everybody, literally everyone now.
But they probably
don't
understand it.
Yeah, you might not understand it, what superposition is, quantum superposition. But, like, if you don't, this serves as an explanation. And if you do, it serves to show you how kind of bored he is in this life, the Walter White style. So, I think this is a really good... It might be the most useful Schrodinger's cat scene I've ever seen at this point.
Mm. Okay.
Because it serves that dual purpose, I think.
Well, speaking of dual purpose, he mentions going back to the Walter White, the growth, decay, transformation. He cites the superposition as a state of both decay and not decay. And I think that duality of something regressing, something, maintaining, something eroding, so is going to be key to understanding what's going on. But we'll see. Meanwhile, Danielle is talking to a friend at her art gallery. I'm calling it an art gallery, about her triathlon goals. So it's telling us that this is a very driven woman. And there's also something I clocked that her friend mentions, that she's just doing this to keep away from her family, which is very much at odds with the Daniela I just saw in the kitchen.
Yeah, I don't feel like this woman knows her at all. Like, are these long-lost friends being reunited for the first time in decades? Because that is not an accurate description. And she says as much. Like, I'm not trying to stay away from them.
Yeah, but I was wondering if they were hinting that this is a different Daniela. Like, early on, that this is the one who's maybe irritated with her husband for spending too... I don't know, because like I said, I'm really up in an air about what's going on in this episode.
Mildly interesting.
Just something I'm clocking.
I wonder if her ability to run a marathon, bike 100 kilometers, and swim I don't know how many miles is going to come in useful. Like, she's obvious that it is establishing her as a physically fit person.
Mm-hmm. I don't know.
A woman of action, maybe. Elsewhere, we see a shadowy man who looks suspiciously like Jason opening a storage unit, but not like a normal storage unit where you've got your old couch and your pinball machine and your beer cooler from college. This is the kind of storage unit like Russ Cole or Jason Bourne would have. It's got various currencies and technical schematics and bric-a-brac, and he's... what's he doing here? He's making note of the family's routine.
Family. Why? Why would a husband need to keep track of his wife and son's routine? Does that make any sense?
Yeah.
Why would he have this secret storage? I like the way that they sort of introduce this character, because it creates a lot of confusion around both of our Jasons, right? Where, like... Mm-hmm. You start to worry, is Jason a dangerous man? Because the ending of this scene is that Jason in the storage locker pulling up to the house, and then we smash cut directly to happy Jason living with his family, and you think, oh my god, this guy is living two separate lives. Is he a dangerous man? Are they in trouble? You know, I think it's really intriguing.
Yeah, and the other question I had is, why is Jason, even if I, you know, on second watch, I'm assuming this is subprime Jason.
Sure, yeah.
Having a hard time getting the interest rates he wants. But I do wonder if why would he do this? If he is like, wouldn't he know his own routines? But then you get a look at prime Jason and I think subprime Jason's life, and maybe this is a huge regret. He should have married Jennifer Connelly, because of course you should have, dumbass.
Yeah, whatever.
I mean, read a book and I know that.
Right. That's always the answer. Is the question, do I marry Jennifer Connelly? The answer is always yes.
Yeah, that he fucked up 17, 18 years ago and preferred to cold lab to be in with her, and now he's regretting and trying to steal Jason Prime's life is my working theory coming out of this episode. But he's also got this purple goo and a hypo spray cartridge. I'm assuming that's what he injects into Jason Prime later in the episode, but I don't know.
Whatever he's about to do, he looks very like reticent but determined to do it. You know, he doesn't like what he's about to do, but he's going to do it
taking a big bold step here. Back at home that night, Jason, I assume Jason Prime's friend Ryan, keeps blowing up his phone. Daniela notices this and encourages him to go to your friend's party that won the major award, you dumb asshole. He came to your hometown, goes to your hole in the wall bar just so you'll come. And I'm like, this definitely feels like the Walter White versus Elliot. The Schwartzes, right?
Yeah, Helly and Gretchen. Yep.
Yeah, that there is, but not as much bad blood, but some kind of resentment that.
Yeah, I'm not Ryan feeling like bad to? Blood. I don't feel bad blood here. What I feel is a guy
road
who
not taken?
Is like, maybe, but more, Jason just feels like a guy who got into a life, has kind of his head down in that life, and just doesn't think or care much for anything else at this point. But, you know, I could be wrong. It's not like I've read the book or anything.
He goes down to the bar. Mm-hmm. And Ryan offers him a job. He's like, I got funded. We had this asshole roommate in college who is a bazillionaire, and we've got $100 million war chest and three times that coming on the back of this not Nobel Award prize I've just won. And I want you. Your notes were crucial to my research. I want you with me
Elliot
by my
offer.
Side.
It's the Elliot offer minus the cancer. Yeah.
But, he offers him his job in his neurotech company, and I thought it was interesting. You also see this is another Walter White thing, that he's kind of slightly embarrassed at his profession when he's with Ryan and all his friends who are these hotshot physicists, and they're like, and what do you do? And he's like, oh, I teach physics at the local school. And they're like, okay. Yeah, that's good. You know, they're doing that thing where it's like, there's nothing wrong with that. And I'm letting you know that by making a commentary that there's absolutely nothing wrong.
It says I expected way more, to come right, out of your mouth there. And
from
yet,
Ryan's friend that he always talks about.
Yeah, the guy, I take it they were college roommates. Is that the actual relationship I'm supposed to get here?
Yeah, they had this this Andrew guy, I guess, is living with them, and he's mentioned that the one that's too good for the dorm room, and that he is rich, and they kind of imply that he, I don't know, they might have had a contentious relationship, but I guess him and Ryan are tight, and he's going to be supplying the funding for their facility.
Yeah, it really paints guy. Ryan is the guy who is more savvy, you know, about how things actually get done. He's the guy who's willing to sort of make friends and schmooze and use money and fame as a tool to further his career, whereas Jason chose a different path.
It's weird that I thought this metaphor he used about being a rock star was weird as written, because he says, you know, we're scientists. We're supposed to be isolated and cloistered and doing our research. And he says, we're supposed to be rock stars. And I'm like, wait a second. Is he talking about like a tortured artist version of a rock star where you just toil? Because like when I say rock star, that's the opposite of someone that's out of the limelight, yeah, toiling in obscurity.
Yeah, it's more like the life he's living at this moment.
Yeah, I mean, he's saying like maybe I misheard, and he's like, you know, we were never meant to be scientists who are cloyed. We were meant to be rock stars, but it didn't seem like that's what the dialogue or the
I felt there was a very weird turn of phrase there as well.
Are all these hints that like times are jumping or stuff? Because like that's what I'm every time I see these contradictions, I'm like, this has got to be intentional, right?
Mildly interesting. Mildly interesting.
Well, touche.
What do you make of them painting these other scientists as kind of suck? I don't really like any of the other friends that Ryan has. I mean, one of them's like, oh, I know I'm a genius, but Ryan is on another level. Like, what? Come on. You're going to brag about it. Maybe like, she's humble brag.
Well, yeah, but also there's, you know, what's the point of false humility if you're with a bunch of geniuses and you're essentially magnifying another genius by saying, I know I'm smart, but this guy's on other level.
Do geniuses sit around and say how much a genius they are?
I don't know, to be honest. I hang around with you 99% of the time, and I would say that neither one of us are geniuses, but I don't know. I mean, I've seen those some of those intellectual Mensa groups, and I feel like they could talk like that. But maybe it's supposed to be off-putting. I was just like,
it was off-putting to me.
All right.
All of them are kind of off-putting. I don't know. Meh.
They seemed very much. I got that. What Jason was feeling is, holy shit, these are my students. Like, these are so young.
Okay.
They're so like, you know, that him and Ryan just are the old men at the party, and Ryan's hitting on these women, and I none of the ones that work for him, I don't think, but he's definitely they're doing a contrast between Ryan, who is this like Bruce Wayne millionaire playboy now, and Jason, who is the solid state steady Eddie family man.
How does the woman who approaches him know him? Does she know him at all? It's not going to be
Jason?
Like a friend or a student. No, Ryan.
It seems like she did. Although, I don't know, because Jimmy Simpson. Jimmy, I like to call him Jimmy Handsome. Jimmy Hemi, we call him. Jimmy Simpson, I think, and I can't believe I'm saying this about a Poyle.
Yeah.
Is Nick a Poyle. Conventionally handsome man.
Unless he's in a robe drinking milk, sure. I agree with that.
And he is very much playing, this is my party, and that's attractive, you know, that he's handsome, he's dressed like a man who's got money in his pocket, and he's acting confident.
Yeah,
that is extremely attractive. So, like, I thought it's like, maybe she recognized him, because I was also taking, you know, especially in subsequent watches, I was seeing, like, Jason Prime discovering that Jason Subprime was on the cover of Discovery of this era, and I'm like, I wonder if Ryan is like an Elon Musk figure, where like, even if you're not into popular science, like, you know who Elon Musk is, like, he's on that level and he got recognized. But I don't know,
Yeah. I don't know. I might believe that, like, Andrew is as the money guy. Because, like, research scientists... nobody knows who research scientists are in the world. Like, Elon Musk is not a research scientist, you know? He's just...
True!
He's just actually a money guy. Like... Mm-hmm. So, maybe Andrew, through proxy, he's famous. Or the bartender could have just been like, yeah, that guy's celebrating winning $1 million in the most prestigious right. award in science. So if right. you want to flirt with somebody, he's the guy.
Yeah. Yeah. So Jason is kind of flustered by all this. And Jimmy's like, oh, I run it by Danielle. And he's like, oh, you know what? I got to get back to my family. And he bails from the party. He's walking home late that night when he is accosted by a man wearing a strange white mask. He is forced to drive in a suspiciously black SUV that looks a lot like the one we've been seeing to an alternate location. You never do that. You never let yourself get kidnapped to an alternate location.
I mean,
stand and fight
here
location
is
A, man.
Get shot. But
well, alternative is drugged and identity stolen and left for dead by a time traveling assassin. So yeah. I'm just saying I'm fighting at alpha location. If you're not gonna find me dead at a second location. I'm gonna be dead in a sidewalk with witnesses around.
This mask is very much how I pictured it as described in the book.
How was it described? Because I was wondering, is this like one of those William Shatner masks? Kind of Michael Myers. It's kind of anonymous.
Like how featureless it is. They describe it sort of as a featureless mask with like these black voids as eyes. I thought they did a pretty good job with that. I don't know if it's just a hoodie that kind of covers it up enough, but
it is creepy. Like I wouldn't expect to be held up by a person looking like this.
It strikes me as like a mask from like Venice when they do their big festival that I can't
masquerade.
Think of the name of. Yeah.
Carnival.
One of those kind of masks. Yeah, it's not Carnival. I don't
really.
I can't remember the name of it.
I loved how he was staggering home underneath the L train, so you know it's in Chicago.
Oh, yeah.
We'll get some Sears Tower footage. Is that what they call it now? Or did someone else buy it?
Last I knew it was the Willis Tower. It might be something different now. Some company probably bought that.
I always called it the Batman building because it's got the two horns on its head.
Yeah.
I don't know. That there's also this interesting thing where, like, two ships passing in the night, which I bet was in a good part of the book, where he's driving off and he sees Ryan flirting with the girl that he was left with, and it's kind of like,
so close
my normal
to help.
my old life is right there.
Mm-hmm.
And there's nothing I can do about it. I would have honked just so he saw
you
me in
shot?
The car. I don't think this guy's shooting shit.
All right. I don't think this guy wants a body.
Hey,
to be
if he wanted to kill me on the street, he wouldn't be driving me to a secondary location. That's the whole key. Do we need to make this like bald move rule number 5? Don't ever allow yourself to be taken to a second location.
Yeah. That's something they go to in the book, too. There's a million things racing through his head in the book, and I really love kind of all the descriptions of it. But one of those things is exactly that. Like, if he wanted to kill me, he would have killed me by now at some point. So clearly he doesn't want to, but you have no idea what he wants him for.
It's interesting that, it's not interesting at the end of it, but he guesses that the guy's phone's password is his father's birthday backwards, which is right on, which is your first clue that this is no ordinary assailant. And
he's
then
asking
it gets
a
weirder.
Lot of incisive questions about his life, right? Like he knows who Daniela and Charlie are, and there's just a lot of weirdness there.
Things get weird when he's taken to the secondary location, which is an industrial looking location. I'm guessing this is the location we saw in the cold open.
Certainly looks like it to me. It's described in the book as a power station. So
it doesn't look like a power station to me, but industrial location.
Yeah, they might have changed it for the show. I don't know.
Where he's beaten, he's robbed of his wedding ring, he is ordered to strip naked, and then he's drugged. But there's a scuffle where the subprime Jason's wrist is injured by a jagged, sharp piece of metal. I can only assume he's going to get tetanus.
Yeah, that's how the book ends. He dies of lockjaw.
It's like a War of the World thing. He just they don't have tetanus vaccines in, yep, in subprime's reality. Yeah, okay.
Mildly interesting.
So yeah, he's as he's drifting out, Jason kind of asks him, like, you know, what the fuck is happening? And the man asks him, you know, are you happy with your life? Have you ever wondered what else you could have been? And he encourages him to hold on to that thought no matter what. And he's also insists he's doing this for us, for both of us. And then Jason asks who he is. He said, you wouldn't believe me if I told you, because I'm Jason Subprime.
Yeah. Yeah. This is an interesting conversation, I guess, when you look back at sort of the description of the Schrodinger's cat with the superposition stuff. You know, you're both alive and dead. He has this life that he wants, but in order to get that life, he had to give up another life. And, you know, there's a line in the book about how wonderful youth is, because it's sort of a point in your life where you're in a superposition before you, yeah, your choices have cemented your life into a shape. And it's, I thought that was really insightful, and it really like gets to the heart of Jason's character in this show.
Interesting.
The cool dilemma that he's in, right? There's also one other thing that I don't know if you were going to touch on it, but you kind of glossed over, which I thought was interesting. He injects him with something, and then he whips out this machine. I don't know what the hell this machine is, but Jason asks him, like, what is that? And he says, it's possibility. I don't know what they're getting at with that, but it was something weird. It was something beyond just a kidnapping, right?
Interesting. And you seriously don't know, or this is a mildly interesting gag?
I don't know. You'll have to determine that for yourself, dear listener.
All right.
This is what you signed up for, man.
Oh, this is what I wanted. So I am assuming this is your favorite part of the whole show, where blinding white light from a pitch black background informs us that Jason is waking up on a medical exam table and later finds himself in quarantine. He discovers that he's the chief science officer and founder of a neurotech company and surrounded by people that he barely recognizes, if he knows them at all. After a confusing round of questioning, he gets increasingly distressed and then bolts and escapes back to Chicago.
Maybe that's... Yeah, I don't know. That doesn't make sense. They describe where he woke up at as a hangar. It didn't really look like a hangar to me, but maybe it's like the industrial part of a hangar, because there's got to be like workshop rooms and stuff.
I thought the where he woke up looked like a Norwegian prison cell, you know, a mid-budget hotel room made out of concrete and IKEA furniture.
Man, hotel rooms are becoming more and more like prison cells. Have you seen the latest trend with glass walls on bathrooms and hotels?
Oh,
absolutely,
yeah.
Absolutely 100% fuck that.
Yeah. The zero entry, zero doorway showers. Like, yeah, what's wrong with doors?
With windows out to the main area of the hotel room? I have no interest in ever staying in a hotel like that.
Well, that would suck for us when we sometimes share a hotel room.
There are so many scenarios in which
that would suck. I definitely want to opt all out of that. Yeah.
Same here.
I've made it 47 years without seeing your bare ass, and I would like to take that to the grave. So I guess we just have to start asking questions when we're booking rooms.
Yeah, totally.
The one thing that jumped out at me is this plastic sealed baggie that he finds in the Norwegian prison cell and he steals from the facility as he escapes. Everything else was just, you know, there's a whole bunch of things I didn't know to worry about, like, oh, you're back and you're cleared for quarantine. You have no radiation, biological or infectious disease problem. We did a whole bunch of tests on you. And he's also brought to this Leighton guy who... he barely remembers, I think, from his college days. And he's the CEO of their company. And this Amanda woman is another high ranking agent of the company. And they say he's the only one that's returned.
Yeah. Intriguing.
So he's been experimenting on himself. That seems risky to put the chief science officer into an experiment that no one has returned from. But
that always smacks to me of desperation. Mm-hmm. I don't know why this is the first thing that pops into my head, but Hollow Man.
No, yeah. It's like you're
Kevin Bacon. You
were behind your schedule.
Invisible.
You should have been in human trials 6 months ago, and they're about to cut your funding, and you believe you're right. So you're a human. It's being trialed. Yeah, that's like they just did this on the Fall of the House of Usher on Netflix last Halloween.
Oh,
you know, where, yeah, it's always seen as like if things were going well, you wouldn't be shooting untested shit into yourself. But
no. This is how you turn into a lizard in Spider-Man. Like, yeah. Don't do it.
But, I mean, you know, Jason Prime's Ryan seemed like he had full funding and it wasn't going to be like a, what do you call that, a shoestring operation. So it wasn't clear to me, like, why they would be desperate. Like, is there a particular,
And that's the thing. Like, this company seems pretty well off. I mean, look at the building. Look at the security. Sure. Look at the resources at their disposal. Yeah, that seems like a weird move for a guy in that position.
Yeah. There's also like they're in this like one of those smart glass. That's what they need to do with the hotel rooms. They need to have that smart glass. We flip a switch and the glass goes opaque. And then if you're with your sexy partner and you want to have sexy shower viewing times, you can unflip it.
The opposite. Your fail state has to be not showing my dong to everyone in the room.
No, that could be if power's not supplied, it could be clear. And when it's turned, you know, turned on, it goes.
Okay.
Yeah. Like
now I'm in. Yeah.
Okay. It's a superposition. Jim's quantum naked ass.
you might see it. You might not.
Which switch did I remember? Is it up or down? Did the electrician wire it right?
Is that the fan or the ass switch?
Far too many variables for me to be comfortable with on this high-risk procedure.
We'll be right back with more Bald Move after this brief pause. Since the dawn of time, we've been putting clothes on our back that identify us with our people, our group, our tribe.
And why Bald Move might be one of the smallest, weirdest tribes out there, transcending all concepts of border, class, culture, and creed, we still have respect for the old ways.
At support.baldmove.com, you can get t-shirts, hats, mugs, and more. We have something for every one of our podcasts, or just wear the four pips of the Bald Move logo with pride.
Bald Move merch beats running around naked, and they make a great gift for the Bald Move fan in your life. Join our tribe! Head over to support.baldmove.com and click on merch to start shopping. Commission podcasts are an awesome feature here at Bald Move that allows you, the individual listener, to decide what we talk about for a single podcast.
The community loves it because it often leads to fun, fan-favorite films and TV shows that we've overlooked getting the coverage they deserve.
And we love it because we're constantly exposed to great stuff that's not even on our radar.
The way it works is simple. You go to support.baldmove.com and you click on commissions. Then you pay the flat rate for the commission and tell us what two-ish hours of content you'd like us to make podcasts on.
Then we'll contact you for details, advanced feedback, and any dedications you'd like to make.
Then we watch the thing, discuss the thing, turn it into a podcast, and pump it right into your ears.
We get consistently great feedback on how much our commissioners love their podcast, and they make great gifts for the dedicated Bald Move fan in your life.
And who knows, that dedicated fan could even be you. Treat yourself. Check out support.baldmove.com for more info.
You've been listening to quite a few Bald Move podcasts now, but you're not in the club? Whoo boy, you are missing out.
Not only are all of our premium club podcast feeds completely ad-free, but we have lots of other great content exclusively for people in the club.
There's a weekly lunch with Jim and Aaron where we chat with fans about anything and everything from TV and films, food, fun, life advice, and more.
But there's also Off the Clock, our premium podcast where we talk about all the shows we don't have time for on our public feeds.
Plus, you get access to our full spoiler-filled first-run movie reviews of our newly released films.
Don't forget Instant Take and Talk Podcast, where we give our hot takes and discuss television shows with our fans live and immediately after the episode airs.
With mega shows like House of the Dragon coming this summer, we're going to have lots to talk about.
Not to mention access to our fun and friendly community of club members, with exclusive Discord channels and a dedicated forum. It's one of the best places on the internet to hang out and chat about pop culture.
Bottom line, you're helping two regular type guys in the Midwest make the content you like to listen to, which some would say is rewarding to itself.
Help keep the lights on and the bits flowing at Bald Move.
And get some awesome content for yourself. Head to support.baldmove.com to join the club today.
And now, back with more Bald Move.
So, but yeah, then they're like, you know, how did you get beat up? Who assaulted you? And he's like, I don't know. And they're like, well, how do you not know? And he's like, fuck this. And he runs out. And he's aided and abetted by a helpful security guard who recognizes him as the founder of the company. And they try to lock him down, but it's too late. And apparently he swims across Lake Michigan to get to Chicago.
Apparently, or at least runs along the coast. That's my guess.
That's a long fuck. Can we talk about how long a walk that is?
Like, from where he's at? So I was a little confused by this, too, because you can't... Surely you can't see across from Michigan to Illinois with Lake Michigan, right? I mean, you'd have to be way at the tip, and Chicago...
I would think that's way over the horizon, yeah.
Yeah, so...
But if you're in, like, Indiana...
He can't be across the... Right, looking up the coast. That's kind of what I was thinking, is he's looking up the coast, and it's a long damn run, yeah. But he gets in a cab, you know.
Well, if he's in South Bend, are we sure that, or not South Bend, if he's...
Gary?
If he's in Gary, are we sure that the company's doing all right?
Actually, just, good point.
It's a dollar a square foot in this abandoned steel mill parking lot in Gary. Let's
It's like having the nicest house on the block in Gary, Indiana. You could still be living in a shithole.
But is there, like, it maybe at the pier? Is that what you were getting at? That this is a different location that you can see?
Feel like pier? No, pier is like heart of Chicago. So I don't know. Either way, yeah, it's a long way away. But he's got to be like on some jutting out piece of land on the coast there.
Yeah. But he gets in a taxi, and it's interesting how he's examining his keys.
Mm-hmm.
It's another little hint that you're examining keys, like, these are not my keys.
Yeah, these are weird keys.
So back at Jason's home, Daniela is angry at him for being late, but who I am calling Subprime Jason manages to romance her into a better mood.
Mm-hmm.
This is very different from the Daniela this is not the Daniela that sent him off to go to his friend's party at the bar, right? We have entered or is it?
My only interesting, I will say, if I am this woman and I'm expecting him to go out for 45 minutes and he comes back at 2 a.m. You know, maybe I'm a little disturbed anyway, but mildly interesting.
You made a big deal out of go to your friend's party and
now
you're celebrating
that I celebrated
award
with him,
and he never leaves the house and never does anything. This is the first time. And like, I mean, he should have called. But on the other hand, what the fuck? So I assumed this was like he had jumped time, but maybe Danielle is just, she's not used to him not keeping tabs. Because she's not, like, mega pissed. Like, all it takes is, like, a couple kisses on her neck and remember when, baby, and she's right back in it. But
no, it's all mildly interesting. I like this scene as sort of context for their longer-term relationship, I guess. We kind of get a mention back to when they first started this life together, and that she was pregnant, and they were trying to decide what kind of life to have, right? And they both kind of made a decision, you know, you could pursue your career and do all this, or we could go have this child and live the family life, and they chose that.
So Subprime Jason talked Jennifer Connelly into an abortion? Is that what you're...
He might have. I don't know. I guess there's an implication.
Is he just a deadbeat dad? I don't...
I don't
and
know.
This
Was the mint is because that's the other thing is the way she reacted to mint chocolate. I was wondering if this was outdated information. Like that used to be her favorite until she threw up while she was pregnant with a half a gallon of milk mint chocolate in her belly, and now she can't ever eat it again because she's like mint chocolate, huh?
And she had a miscarriage because of she was throwing up so hard.
She has a rare
really traumatized
DNA marker where mint chocolate just causes her uterus to turn inside out.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Yeah, it's bad. So she's annoyed and still mad, but the thing that kind of warms her up is him revealing that Ryan offered him a job, implying that maybe she's been a little, I don't know if bitter is too strong a word, but the fact that she's been, you know, wearing the financial pants in the family might have been wearing on her.
Yeah, potentially. I mean, look, Jason's contributing, right? It's not like he's not working.
He's a college professor, tenured college professor. He's probably doing all right.
He's doing all right.
American standards, yeah.
Yeah, but, you know, Chicago's an expensive city, so I imagine it takes both of these incomes to make that household go.
Not if you're squatting in a abandoned parking lot in Gary.
True.
Property value's very low.
So at this point, I was like, oh, wow, they're really going for the big reveal here, which is that there's a Jason Prime and a subprime Jason. They do it with this shot at the very beginning of this scene where Jason, subprime Jason, leaves the mask in the car seat, right?
Right.
And then you're left to wonder, okay, what are we seeing? Is this linear time? Is he leaving that mask in the car seat and coming inside? Or are we leaving a Jason who just left that mask and jumping to a different Jason? But then we're going to jump also to a different Jason here with Prime Jason in this other weird thing that's going on, this house that isn't his, right?
Yeah, I want to reiterate that point I made about, you know, that this is like the road less not taken because, you know, apparently subprime Jason had a very different answer to the question of which he'd rather prefer, the cold sterility of his lab or Jennifer Connelly in his bed.
That's what it seems
but
like.
But he's calling back to that, I think, as a way to like, I'm fixing that now.
Yeah, and it makes you think like, there's a shout out earlier in the episode with Prime Jason where they tell him you've been gone for 14 months. No one's seen you. Right. Does that imply that this Jason has been watching the goings on of this family for 14 months?
That's a good question, because the other thing that I clocked in this scene was that, you know, we talked about, like, is this an interdimensional? Is this a space-time kind of thing? He said, when she said, why didn't you call? He said, time got away from me. To me, says that this is some kind of time travel thing rather than, like, some kind of dimensional paradox or something.
Mildly interesting, Aaron.
But if he's, like, subprime Jason's been missing for 14 months, but he just now come back. So that purple shit that he shot him through with the device, that must have been what he used to send him back to his timeline.
Mildly interesting. I will say, yeah, they are like leaning into the idea of time a little bit, right?
It does seem. I mean, that's what I'm picking up here. You alluded to this. We'll go ahead and get into it. A different Jason. I think this is Prime Jason. Goes back to his room, but everything he finds is wrong. There's no Danielle. No Daniela, no Charlie, but there is this Amanda chick that now claims they live together. He gets increasingly agitated once again until a truck with several men pull up to the front door and start banging, demanding to be let in, which causes him to bolt once more.
Oh, yeah.
Meanwhile, subprime Jason makes sweet love to Daniela.
Yep. So Amanda is, we saw her earlier in the episode. She was the first person that, when Jason, subprime Jason, woke up, she was the first person he saw. She's the therapist there at whatever this company's name is. I forget. Velocity Labs, maybe. So, they clearly have some kind of relationship, right? Or do you think that this actually isn't his house, wherever he is here, and that this is just her house? that would be weird because all of his stuff is in the office.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I've definitely seen
dudes and more commonly women move in and you would never know it wasn't their place. But I don't know. My intuition said that this was his exact same home, but this is subprime Jason's life where he didn't get with Jennifer Connelly. He founded the tech company on his own damn notes, got a different rich friend, asshole friend from college to bankroll him, and he's kind of like not married, but fucking this woman who works for the company.
Yeah, they're doing a really good job painting a picture of the two Jasons here as being very different people, right?
Yeah.
I mean, just with the decoration, the lifestyle that they have. My God, everything is so dark in this house, you know, where the other house had some actual lighting and some warmth to it.
Yeah,
this is just cold. And he's got a bunch of art, but like it doesn't feel alive the way that the other house does.
No children have played in this house. There's no pets.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing to disturb the perfection. And Amanda has a fatal flaw. She's not Jennifer Connelly. So apparently that's what broke the whole deal down and caused this guy to split the atom and flip the benzene ring and go back in time to correct his mistake. I don't know. She seems like she's a perfectly okay gal.
I have no reason to dislike her.
But there's also something sinister about her. Like, you know, she takes that phone call and says, let me talk to him alone. And no one listens to her. They come in but that she feels like a handler more than a girlfriend. But that also could be because
she's a therapist.
Jason is acting like a crazy person.
Yeah, that's a thing. You know, this Jason that they think they know is acting wild. And so as the therapist there, I think she feels it's kind of her responsibility and like to avoid violence or force being used here to you know, wrangle him. But you see a lot of, I guess, subprime Jason's life here where he's won the Pavia. You know, he was the guy who won it in quantum mechanics.
And not just that, like dozens of awards and prizes over tons of interlocking, overlapping disciplines.
And he's got this apparently huge company that he's built and as big of an office as he wants in that place. And yet here he is with a whole bunch of research binders at home. You get the impression that his life is work, right?
Yeah. Yeah. 100%. That's the end of the episode and it's kind of all my thoughts. Do you got anything you want to?
I really like the soundtrack when he runs too. I thought there's a like chaotic sort of life in shambles, confused element to this. Like lots of stuff going on in this soundtrack, but like none of it intelligible. It really like illustrates the confusion he's feeling in the moment.
Yeah, I liked most of the soundtrack. I thought it was it kind of sounds like something that Steven Soderbergh, like it sounds like a kind of like that kind of score to one of his films. The only thing I did not like the main theme, but that main theme could serve to just make me feel uncomfortable and discordant.
Yeah,
it's kind of like an uglier Mad Men, very minor chords but industrial too.
So, you know, his subprime Jason here is having sex with Daniela and she's like, oh, what happened to your arm? She notices the damage. He's like, you wouldn't believe me if I told you. And I'm thinking, this is this guy's go-to line. Like, he's just going to be saying this for the whole series. He goes like through the Taco Bell drive-thru. What would you like for your order? And he goes, you wouldn't believe me if I told you.
I'm actually going to say that the next time I go to Taco Bell. I just do the I think you should leave order. I want 50 tacos and 50 I think that they really wanted you to know that Jason and subprime Jason were the same but different, and like like you said, the mask in the car, the similar language that they used. It's very
the
obvious. There wasn't much of a mystery
about like, have you ever, you know, wished you'd made other choices or something? Like, that's a dead giveaway, right? So
right,
they want you to know. I'm just a little surprised by that, knowing that the book takes a little bit longer to get to that place. So
yeah,
they must be hurrying through this. I think I have an idea how they're going to stretch out maybe the middle of this book to make the TV show last 10 episodes. And I think right. it's going to be compelling and fun to watch.
Interesting.
But I could be wrong about that. I don't want to say really what it is.
I'll have to check in with you at the when we get to that point. Maybe you can let us know, because yeah, it seems like that's a huge part of the mystery that they're just dispensing with. Which fair enough. Like they did. Like, I've seen that in countless adaptations. Like, you know, especially in the Game of Thrones series, there was constant mistaken identities and a guy hiding out of this and that, and it just doesn't work on the screen.
Totally. Yeah.
Because it's like, oh well, the shit that's Barristan the Bold. That's not an old man.
And if you really try and lean into it, you kind of get to Westworld season 2 territory, where I find myself just throwing my hands up and saying, I don't care about any of this. It's too tricky.
Yeah. Yeah. This is a 3-card Monty game that's rigged and I'm never going to be right. And you're always going to take my money and fuck off. Yeah. No, I definitely can get that. But I don't know. I do hope, because I will say that I was kind of getting a sick feeling in my stomach when I saw like how much this looks like constantly. And it is wild that they greenlit two shows they're going to air 2 months apart that cover so much of the same ground.
Yeah, they're essentially about the quantum superposition, like both of them.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
At least the 4 episodes.
Things being alive, things being dead, things being, people being unstuck out of their own timeline. I did not like that series. Hopefully I'll like this one. I'm expecting, you know, usually when I see that 1-2 punch, it's because the first episode might have had an awkward, it didn't have like a hook to it, and I didn't feel like this felt like a fine episode, but like... Yeah. But I am expecting that hook to really, really get me this next episode. I definitely felt that way with the last time, you know, Shogun did that too, where it's like, you know, first episode, I'm like, okay, I'm pretty intrigued. But that second episode, definitely like, hell yeah, I'm going to watch this every week. So, yeah.
Well, we're going to watch it here pretty soon, so.
Yeah, as I mentioned outset, we're not planning on doing feedback just because we don't. It's not practical. We'll have recorded all this in advance so that we can give you good coverage, timely coverage, and still have time to deal with the stuff that we're going to be dealing with in June, which is going to be a smorgasbord. But yeah, you go ahead and darkmatter@baldmove.com if you do want to send some stuff. Maybe we can do a wrap up podcast at the end of season. Who knows? You can also support us at support.baldmove.com. Find out many great options that you can do. You can join the club and get tons of bonus features. We just released a off the clock episode talking about our experiences with Fallout, as well as Alex Garland's new Civil War, X-Men 97, and more. We do all kinds of stuff regularly for our club members, and you get ad-free feeds. support.baldmove.com, and check us out on social medias at Bald Move. That's going to do it for this episode. The second episode is out right now. If you're jonesing for it, go watch it, go listen, and we'll see you over there. Until then, I'm your host, Aaron.
And I'm mildly interesting.
I'm the prime host that I'm saying later.